Thank you. There is a book that I discovered a couple of years ago, just a little side note. I haven't read it, but I read an article, I read the majority of an article about it. But the title says enough. It's a book written by a guy named David Robb, and he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And the title of the book is called Living Between the Scans. And for those of you who have been or are currently undergoing cancer treatment, you understand everything that is wrapped up in that short little phrase. Life between scans is kind of like a roller coaster. It's a roller coaster ride of emotions, just spiritually and emotionally. You begin to ask the questions, am I getting better? Is the treatment working? Has it spread? You begin to self-evaluate as you move closer to the next scan. Why does my head hurt a little bit? Why does my stomach hurt? Why am I so tired? And those things begin to creep in like they're evidence of something else going on. And waiting is absolutely no fun. And whenever you're in the midst of something like that, the waiting can become excruciating. It doesn't matter what we're waiting for. The longer we wait, the more frustrated we become. Dennis always referred to this as limbo. And we talked for years, it would pop up in different sermons and different series about this idea of limbo. And in October 17, 2017, when I was diagnosed with cancer, it began the beginning of what's been kind of a strange limbo since then. Of waiting. It appeared at first that there was no treatment and surgery was not an option. And by God's grace, through fantastic research and immunotherapy, that a cancer that is normally not treatable and can't be performed surgery on, they were able to pause that cancer and kind of restore my ability to experience life in a healthy way, which is just astounding and amazing. What's strange is usually you think about the idea of if you get cancer and you either get cured of cancer or it takes your life. And you don't think about that now with current technology and research that there's actually this kind of in-between where you can actually have cancer, but continue to live and be healthy. Strange, and it doesn't make sense. And I'm grateful to live in a time and a day when we can be I can experience that, which is just fantastic. But this idea of waiting, this idea of limbo, it can be excruciating. It can be painful. And you guys all know that. There's all kinds of things that we wait for. There are categories that we find ourselves waiting for. Some of them are bad things. A sick family member or friend that we know is just going to eventually pass away, and we find ourselves kind of waiting for that to happen. Waiting for that call back from the doctor with the test results. Waiting for the downsizing that you know is imminent. But we also find ourselves waiting for good things to come, right? We're waiting for that right someone to come along. We're waiting to become a parent. We're waiting to graduate, to get the job that we want. We're waiting for Christmas morning to finally come. Some of you guys that are younger are waiting to get your license, waiting to finally get a car, standing there patiently waiting for the Keurig to finally finish your cup of coffee so you can get started, right? Waiting for COVID to be over so that theaters will finally reopen and Marvel's Black Widow will finally be released in theaters, right? How long do we have to wait? It's excruciating. Waiting can be painful, and it leads to frustration, anger. It can lead to depression, doubt, and fear. And today we want to look at Joshua 4 and take a look at what it happens and what does life can look like and should look like when the waiting is finally over. In order, you can go ahead and flip to Joshua 4. In order to truly understand what's going on in Joshua 4, we need to take a little bit of a history lesson and jump back. And so we're going to jump back just briefly and take a look at 600 years, all right, in order to get the picture. In Genesis chapter 12, we remember, which was about 680 years before Joshua 4, Abraham, known at the time as Abram, has a conversation with God. And Abram was just this God-fearing man that God chose him and told him specific things. He said, I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to give you a big family. I'm going to bless the world through you. And now we know that to be the coming Jesus, the Messiah, who would save the world by grace through faith. And also that he was going to give them real estate, that he was going to give them a piece of property that we call the Promised Land. So Abram and Sarai, who was their names at the time, they don't have any children, which makes it kind of difficult to become a great nation. 25 years pass before Abram finally has a kid. So Isaac is born, and Abraham is 100 years old, and God changes their names to Abraham and Sarah. Isaac then has a son, Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons, and God changes his name to Israel to become the father of the nation that we now know as Israel. His 11th son, if you remember the story, his 11th son, Joseph, is sold into slavery by his brothers and ends up in Egypt. We see that story in Genesis 37. And then the rest of his family eventually travel to Egypt because of famine and end up becoming held as slaves in Egypt. And at that time, you remember the story, God appoints Moses as leader, and after a bunch of horrible plagues, Pharaoh lets them go. They experience the miraculous parting of the Red Sea, and they escape Pharaoh's pursuing army. And at this point, the Israelites have become a great nation. But it has been 430 years since the promise to Abraham, and they have spent their entire time as nomads and slaves. So God had promised them some real estate. God had promised them some land. 430 years they lived either wandering as nomad or slaves to somebody else. They wander in the desert for a while, and God gives Moses the law. A couple of years later, after leaving Egypt, Moses and Aaron lead the nation to the edge of the Promised Land. And you remember they send in the 12 spies, and they come back with a negative report. There's giants in the land. We'll not be able to take it. And God tells them that they will not be allowed to enter the Promised Land for 40 years because of their lack of faith. After living in the desert and miraculously living off manna, an entire generation, including Moses, dies, and Joshua leads them back to the edge of the Promised Land. It has been almost 500 years now since God first told Abraham that he would give his family a piece of real estate in the Promised Land. 500 years. And the story was passed on, and it was something that they held on to, and God makes promises, but then the question is, does God keep his promises? 500 years. Anybody know what happened 500 years ago from today? I was writing all the things I knew that happened 500 years ago, and I couldn't come up with anything. So 500 years ago was Martin Luther was excommunicated. 500 years ago, Ferdinand Magellan discovered Guam and the Philippines. The Philippines. The Aztecs were defeated, and Tenochtitlan fell. 500 years ago. That's a long time to wait for God to fulfill a promise. See, I order something from Amazon, and I get really, really frustrated when it's not there on day two, right? I mean, I will look, and I will order stuff, and then you click, you know, all the way, and it gets to that very last page, and like, seven of the things will come in 2 days, but one of the things it will take 4 or 5 days, I back out and I go look for something else because I want it in 2 days. Great thing is once they get the Amazon Fulfillment Center here, we'll get everything in like 1 day. So that will be awesome. That'll be great. I hate waiting a whole week for the next episode of WandaVision to come out. Right? Any of you guys watching that? And a lot of you are like, I don't even know what that is. Disney Plus? Yeah? The kids are like, yeah, we want to watch that. How long have we had to wait for the Cowboys to finally get their act together? You guys don't care about that, right? Those of us who are fans feel like we've been waiting forever. And so in the middle of the waiting, we want to look at what does God do and can do in our lives. We will be waiting. We will be in limbo. Some of you find yourselves in limbo right now. And so the first thing I want to encourage you with is don't forget to see God in the waiting. Don't forget to see God in the waiting. There are times in our lives when we find ourselves waiting. We're stuck in that limbo. I know a little bit of us, we all feel a little bit that way right now. I don't know how many times I have conversations with people about, you know, yeah, we closed down the office at the beginning of COVID, and we had a 6 to 8 week plan for what we were going to do, you know, and everybody felt like it was going to be 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 3 months. And the news was saying, you know, this is going to be much longer than that. We're all like, oh, they're crazy, you know. And here we are a year later going, when are things going to get back to normal? We find ourselves collectively in a limbo, not only the individual things that we're dealing with, but collectively. We all struggle with when are things going to get normal? When is the end going to be here? See, God interacted with the nation of Israel throughout that entire 500 years. All of the tons of the Old Testament covers that 600 years that I just breezed through. And God constantly was interacting with them. And the weird thing is that some of the people recognized that, and it drew them to trust God in the midst of all that. It created an intimacy between them and their God, drew them closer amid the waiting, but some didn't. After amazing miracles and God's provision, we see that the nation of Israel would grumble, would argue, would decide that they knew better than God did. And we just don't want to miss God in the middle of the limbo. We don't want to miss seeing Him in the middle of the waiting. Last week in Joshua 3, we saw God miraculously stop the Jordan River. As you remember, they came up to the Jordan River, and Michael talked about all that God had told them was going to happen, and finally, God brings them to the edge of the promised land, and God miraculously stops the Jordan River from flowing so that the people can cross into the long-awaited promised land. Can you imagine what that was like? Coming up to a river, have you ever had to cross a river, you know, and it's kind of delicate and it's rushing and you usually step on a rock and it's slippery and you fall and your spouse or your children laugh at you. But can you imagine some 2 million people walking across a riverbed that the water was being miraculously held back? Can you imagine that? And this is the point we're at today, where we finally get to today's passage, which is Joshua 4. That was all basically set up. God continues the narrative in Joshua 4. And God tells Joshua to have 12 men. He says, get 12 men, one from each tribe. Take a stone out of the riverbed and carry it to the other side. What we see in the next section of the chapter are the construction of two stacks of rocks. Two stacks of rocks that are both loaded with meaning. And that's what we want to take a look at. Joshua 4:9 says, then Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing, and they are there to this day. So basically, we have the priests walk into the river carrying the Ark of the Covenant. The second they touch the water, it stops running from upstream. And the nation, 2 million people, cross the river. And so Joshua collects up some stones and stacks up some stones where the priests are standing in the riverbed. And so once you can imagine, once that water rushes back in and that it would cover that up, it talks about the river being at flood stage and that you might not be able to see these rocks. But then the river would fluctuate. And as the river goes down, you might be able to see the rocks standing up, which would look very odd to have a stack of rocks in the middle of the river. Well, how did that get there? What caused that? And it was to serve as a reminder of what God had done. Put yourselves into the shoes of the crowd. I want you to kind of imagine with me what it would be like to be one of the people in this large crowd of 2 million people. As we're standing there, we see the priests walk into the Jordan River, and immediately this water miraculously stops flowing. You would see the water moving away from you in the other direction. And as it flowed away, the ground underneath is dry. God must really, really value this ark and these priests who are carrying it. Man, the second they touch the water, God must really love and value these people. Well, of course he does. It's the physical representation of his presence. And those priests, they're holy men. They help us to commune with God. They are committed to interceding on my behalf before God. They knew God. They talked with God. Then I hear Joshua command me and everyone else to step into the dry riverbed and make my way across. But a voice begins to talk to me. I am not nearly as holy as these men. There's something incredible and powerful and supernatural going on here. I'm most likely going to ruin it, right? Most of these people don't know me, but if they did know me, they would know that I am not as worthy. They don't know the things that I say, the doubts that I have. And I'm almost certain that I will bring judgment on everyone when I am who am so unworthy step into this river. The waters will rush back in and sweep us all away. The ark, the priests, my family and friends will all be lost. We'll all be swept away. We will all be judged because I am not worthy to receive God's grace and mercy. But there's too many people. I can't really do anything. There's really no option. And I'm caught up in the flow of the crowd, and I'm forced to step in the river, and I hold my breath. But nothing happens. Everything stays calm. God extends me His grace. And brings us to our second point of don't forget to trust God during the unknown. Don't forget to trust God during the unknown. How many times do you find yourself at the bottom of the riverbed, unsure of what is going on, unsure of how it will turn out? During those times is when God speaks into our lives and our hearts and says, "You're my very creation, you are loved, and I extend grace to you." A lot of times when we find ourselves in the middle of the unknown, when we're stuck in this limbo, it's easy to feel all alone, completely by yourself. Someone, a friend, a family, someone who loves Jesus will come, and in the midst of that, you know what it feels like when they show up and they just stand beside you to encourage you, to give you strength, to support you, and to remind you to trust God in the middle of the unknown. And that's what these priests were doing. These priests stood, and there was safety and comfort in their presence. Who are godly people that have stood with you? Think about the things that you've gone through, the times that you've been in the middle of the unknown. Who are those people that have stood next to you in the midst of that? And maybe even a better question is, who is someone near you, someone in your life that is in the middle of the unknown? Someone that needs someone to come alongside and stand beside them. See, these first stack of rocks that Joshua puts together is a reminder of what happened in the middle of that riverbed. Not only that the water stayed back, but more importantly, that God's grace and mercy come to those who trust Him. So after everyone reaches the other side, the massive crowd, they're all moving across this miraculous event. When they get to the other side, then Joshua commands the priest to come up out of the river, and the water rushes back in. And at this point, we see the second stack of rocks. If you go over to Joshua 4:19. So if you remember, Joshua told them as they were going across for one person from each tribe to grab a rock out of the riverbed. So now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th of the first month and camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of Jericho. As for those 12 stones which they had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set them up at Gilgal. And he said to the sons of Israel, "When your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, 'What are these stones? What are these stones?' then you shall inform your children, saying, 'Israel crossed this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea, which he dried up before us until we had crossed, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever.'" Now, it's easy to miss something super significant in this little passage I read. Verse 19 starts out and says, "Now the people came from the Jordan on the 10th of the first month." Now, if you go back to Exodus 12, the first plagues have already happened. You remember they're enslaved. They've been there for a long time. Moses is trying to get his people freed, and God is sending these plagues, and all these plagues have happened. And God has instructed Moses to prepare the nation of Israel for the last and final plague. He asked to prepare them for the Passover, which death would come to the firstborn of every household, except those that put the blood of the lamb on their doorpost. Death would pass over them. And as they prepared for this very first Passover, it tells us in Exodus 12, "This month shall be the beginning of months for you. It is to be the first month of the year for you. Speaking to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, they are each one of you to take the lamb for themselves." It was the same day of the year that he told them to prepare for the first Passover as the day that they stepped onto the other side of the Jordan River. And it was exactly 40 years later to the day that God began preparing for the first Passover, to where God showed that he finally gave them the promised land. He finally allowed them to see his promise come to fruition. This also meant that the day that they crossed over the Jordan, imagine, okay, all this miraculous stuff is happening. You're tired, you're excited, you're scared, whatever the emotions are. You get on the other side and you're thinking, what now? You immediately have to start preparing for the Passover, because there was preparations that had to be done. And if you can imagine that they were probably preparing for one of the most exciting Passovers that they had experienced in the past 40 years. Would you rather celebrate a party in the desert or in a new home that God's finally provided for you after a wait? Would you, you know, they finally arrived to the promised land. I can imagine they're like, this is going to be the best Passover ever. 500 years after the promise to Abraham, 40 years of wandering in the desert, and they finally have stepped foot in the promised land. This Passover celebration is going to be like no other. In the midst of the celebration, Joshua 4 tells us in verse 20, "As for the 12 stones which they had taken from the Jordan, Joshua set them up at Gilgal." And then in verse 24, he says, "So that all the people of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever." Don't forget to worship God amid the celebration. Don't forget to worship God amid the celebration. So when we're in limbo, when we're struggling, when we're in the middle of the unknown, and finally we come out of it, man, sometimes we pray hard in the middle of the struggle, and then all of a sudden everything comes to fruition, and it's sometimes we just celebrate it and we forget to stop and worship God in the midst of it. So how do we not forget? Three things I want to kind of leave you here right at the end. Don't forget to remember. Don't forget to remember. How can we do that? First of all, capture the moment. Capture the moment. What does he do? He builds these stones. It becomes something that for them to remember. They capture it. You know, we take photographs of stuff. One of the things Facebook has a lot of good stuff and bad stuff. One of the things I love about Facebook is when I open it up and it'll say, 10 years ago today, here's a memory. And it's something that you look at and you're like, oh man, I forgot about that. That was really amazing and awesome. And it becomes this moment where you like are grateful and trust God and worship God in the midst of that. We can't forget to capture those moments. And then also, secondly, reflect on it. Reflect often. Think about it. Remember it. So we got to capture it somehow. Journal it. Find some way to create a memory that's maybe connected to an item, something you can see so that you can stop and reflect on it and remember. What did God do in the midst of the waiting? What did God do in the midst of the unknown? And how did we celebrate Him? How did we worship Him in the midst of the celebration? Reflect on that. And then one of the most important parts of this is sharing it with others. Share it with others. God tells Joshua that these stacks of stones will serve as a symbol for those who come later. For those who come later. They were to share and pass on the story of God's love, faithfulness, grace, and mercy. So we need to not forget. I find myself sometimes, I'll sit down and start talking to my kids about something. And, it's something from 15, 20 years ago. And as we get into it, there's a part of me that thinks, well, how far do I want to go into that story and all that? And we just kind of jump in. And I begin to share about the emotions of what I was feeling at the time. And it's just like they become riveted to it. And in that moment, I have the ability to share with them and for them to see God's faithfulness in an event that they weren't even alive when it happened. And it'd be an encouragement for them to trust God in the midst of those moments themselves. One such symbol that the church has been given is communion. Communion is one of those symbols that gives us the ability to remember. And so we take communion as a reminder of Jesus and His sacrifice that extends God's grace and mercy to all who believe. And so at this time, I'm going to ask Shannon, he's going to come up and lead us through a time of communion. And please reflect on it as in what ways have you been able to see God in the waiting? When have you had to trust Him in the midst of the unknown? And then us to remember Him amidst the celebration. Shannon.